Wednesday, April 8, 2020. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from the Mile High City right here in Denver, Colorado, and we are back for another week of talking sports with a dose of common sense. Hey, happy Wednesday to you. I hope that your week is off to a strong start. I hope that you and your family and your friends and all the people in your life are staying healthy. We are glad to have you here with us today. Now, I know we haven't been talking much in the way of national days of the year lately with all of the crazy serious things going on in the world right now, but we need to mention a national day of the year today. And please understand, like, I'm not making light of it. I'm not making fun of it. But tomorrow, April 9th, is actually National Alcohol Screening Day. Now, every year, National Alcohol Screening Day raises awareness about the harmful effects that alcohol abuse and alcohol dependency can have on a person. By bringing an opportunity for education, referrals, and treatment to those with alcohol dependency issues, screening is a large part of the outreach program. Screening centers are supposed to be located this year, we're not sure, at like colleges, military installations, designated businesses, and selected government agencies. Now, like I said, I'm not sure we're going to have a whole lot in the way of like alcohol screening this year. But if you are struggling, I hope that you find the help that you need. And you know, there are many, many places that are ready and willing to help you. Having said all of that, this feels like a really, really bad year for National Alcohol Screening Day, because we're all like in quarantine. We're all locked up. We can't go out. And therefore, we have lost track of like everything. I mean, no one knows what day it is. No one knows what month it is. No one knows what time it is. Everything is mixed up. We're like working from home. We're homeschooling our kids. We're eating leftover pizza for breakfast and telling our kids, hey, make sure you finish that Pop-Tart before you have your cupcake dessert. But here's the other dangerous aspect of this whole thing. Like I said, we don't know what time it is. So we're drinking things like margarita coffees in the morning with our breakfast. Now, if you don't know what a margarita coffee is, it's exactly like a normal coffee, but you add a margarita to your cup and you hold the coffee.
Yeah!
We are out in our yards practicing like social distancing, but also holding up signs to cars passing by saying, you honk and we'll drink. We are pouring wine over our cereal in the morning. I mean, we're not deviants. We're not like pouring red wine. We're using the white stuff. But still, I feel like we are all drinking quite a bit these days as we deal with all of the weirdness that is going on in the world. And I swear, I'm not trying to make a joke at the expense of National Alcohol Screening Day. I'm just saying that like everything else right now in the world, I would go ahead and say that day is probably getting canceled this year because not too many people are passing an alcohol screen right now. Not with the way things stand, not how things are. But if it helps at all, alcohol screening day next year, oh, you're about to get real, real busy because it just feels like there's going to be a lot of people with maybe some alcohol dependency issues at this time next year. Hey, if you would like to contact the show, maybe tell us how you are living as a functional alcoholic right now. We would love to hear from you. Hit us up on email, dailydosesports@gmail.com, or go find us over on Facebook or Twitter. Both of those handles are at Daily Dose Sports. And you know, I told you the last few weeks, I know everyone, like I said, is like on quarantine. If you're bored, if you're struggling, if you're having a hard time, if you just want to talk, drop us a line. Send us whatever you have. Sometimes it just helps to reach out, to ask a question, maybe state some thoughts you might have. Whatever you have, bring it. Maybe you have some feedback for the show. Maybe you have some feedback for the YouTube edition of the show. Maybe you have a suggestion. Maybe you have some advice. Maybe you need the Daily Dose to get involved in a situation for you. We would love to hear from you, especially, like I said, at this time. Also, we all know we're all doing it. We're all doing the online shopping thing right now. We're ordering our stuff like from the grocery stores to be delivered. All those things you're doing online. Make sure you stop by tpublic.com and pick up some Daily Dose gear. If you're going to have to be stuck inside anyways, you might as well be sporting some Daily Dose gear as you do. We've got some Daily Dose gear actually hanging up here in the studio that you can see. We do have our standard Daily Dose gear. That's the t-shirt that is hanging up right behind me. We also have our iTeam shirts over there. We've got a couple different styles that you can go with. We have our Daily Dose Faster Than Domestic Violence t-shirts you can get over there. The cool thing about it, you can pick in different colors. You can get a number of different items from sweatshirts to hoodies to t-shirts, a lot of different things. Just go to tpublic.com, search Daily Dose, scroll down until you see our logo and pick exactly what you need. But there is a ton of stuff at tpublic.com, so make sure that you stop by. Hey, today on the show, we're actually going to be doing something a little bit different because, I mean, what choice do we have? There's not a whole lot going on right now. But today on The Dose, I'm actually going to be joined by a longtime friend of the show, and we are going to be discussing some of the greatest games in the history of sports. Mike from Castle Rock is going to stop by, and we're going to talk about some of the greatest contests in sports history. Going to be getting to that in just a few minutes. Talk about a number of things over there. Now, like I said, remember, we are now placing a video portion of the podcast over on YouTube. So make sure you head over to YouTube and subscribe to the Daily Dose over there. Thanks to everyone who went over there, who has been watching, who has been subscribing to the show. We appreciate that. We're putting up a new video of the show every single week. So make sure that you check that out as well. But let's go ahead and jump into a few stories that are coming out in the world of sports. Hey, LSU head football coach Ed Orgeron has now filed for divorce from his wife of 23 years. This is crazy. I mean, this takes place like just a few weeks after Ed and the LSU Tigers won the national championship in college football. It's a sad story here, but I do have a few questions about this story. First, this wasn't a verbal request by Ed Orgeron, was it? Because, I mean, for all we know, that's not even what he asked for. Did she understand the words that he was saying?
You come to LSU, you're supposed to be able to beat Alabama.
I mean, what if Ed Orgeron was saying, hey, honey, we need to get a police force? Or maybe he was saying, hey, honey, I didn't get my main course. Or what if he was saying, hey, honey, we ought to go pick up a rocking horse. And she thought he was saying, hey, honey, we ought to get a divorce. I just hope that this was written down, is what I'm saying. Because it might just be a massive misunderstanding. Second, these two people, Ed Orgeron and his wife, have been married for over 20 years. And it took them, what, 2-3 weeks on quarantine to bury that marriage completely? I don't know, that's fast, isn't it? I mean, David Blaine has lived hanging upside down in a bucket of water longer than that lasted once we went on quarantine. So I guess what that is telling me, hey, folks on quarantine, be very careful with your marriage. I hope it's going well with both of you in the house. I hope you're not freaking out. I hope you're not getting mad at your kids. I hope you are living and doing okay. Because as you can see, Ed Orgeron has done a lot of things. He helped LSU. He's worked at USC. He's done a lot of things. He's worked in a lot of tough situations. It took him 2 or 3 weeks and he had to bail on that marriage. But here's the question that I think is on everyone's mind. Is there any chance whatsoever that Ed Orgeron is on the next season of The Bachelor? Because I'm telling you right now, I don't watch that show. I don't care about that kind of show. I don't watch those reality kind of shows. But if Ed Orgeron's on it, no, I feel like I might tune in. No, I wouldn't be able to understand what he was saying, but it would be awesome and I would be watching. We need to make this happen. Ed Orgeron needs to be on the next Bachelor. Okay, coming back. Yes, we are all stuck inside these days. And no, there isn't a whole lot to watch. There's no new sports on. And a lot of shows are even on hiatus right now. But if you are hurting and you need some sports to watch, when we come back, we are going to be breaking down some of the greatest games of all time. And you just might be able to go check a few of them out. Joining us right now, we have a longtime friend of the Daily Dose, a sports junkie like myself who follows sports and also has a sense of sports history. And that's why we wanted to have Mike from Castle Rock on with us today. Mike, thank you so much for stopping by. I hope your quarantine is going well.
Oh, well, I don't want to comment on that because I think this is some children listen to this, but it's tough. But like we talked about earlier, you and I are both definitely fortunate to, at this point at least, still have employment. So let's have a little fun here and maybe give some people something to listen to.
Mike, I am assuming that like everyone else, you are a bit bored. And while we aren't having to like storm the beaches or like capture a hill, This seems to be, at least right now, our generation's cross to bear for the time being. And we're just trying to stave off boredom. I know it's not the worst thing in the world, but we are trying to like stave off boredom. Are there any shows, before we get into sports and all that, are there any shows you're watching now? Anything on Netflix you're watching now? Any movies? Anything worth our time before we get to the sports stuff?
Boy, honestly, yeah. In the last couple of weeks, we've really, I'm a big fan of Ozark.
Season 3
just came out. I binged through that rather quickly. You know, wife and I went and saw the stay-at-home order came. The movie 1917 is a fantastic war movie about World War I. Netflix has got to be loving life right now. Amazon Prime, all those streaming services.
Yes, they're blowing up. And you know, same thing. You know, Ozark I've watched. We started The Outsider, which is very, very good. If you haven't watched Peaky Blinders on Netflix, I'm telling you right now, you ought to be watching Peaky Blinders. And I'll give you a show totally under the radar. And when you hear it, everybody's going to be like, what are you talking about? There is a show on Netflix called Derry Girls, D-E-R-R-Y. It will make you laugh. It's kind of British comedy, but it is funny. It'll make you laugh. Have you watched any of Peyton's Places on ESPN Plus yet?
I haven't. I actually have a large list of things when I get through my top handful to watch, and that is definitely on that list. He's just entertaining.
Yeah, he is. He's really, really good. And the great thing about it is not only are you watching it and you're seeing highlights and you're hearing his interviews, but you're also getting this really cool history of the NFL because he really digs deep and he really goes back and you learn some things. Peyton's Places is absolutely phenomenal. I don't know if that's the reason why he didn't do the whole Monday Night Football thing, but he does a great job. I'll give you one other kind of sneaky show to watch. I think it's called Basketball or Nothing, and it's on Netflix, and it's about a high school basketball team on a reservation down in Arizona, I think it is, and it just kind of follows through their season. It's actually really, really well done. It's really interesting. But yeah, you know, there's just not a whole lot to watch right now. And I've heard, not coincidentally, that ESPN's numbers are down quite a bit. And I have a few theories on why. For one, and I hate to say this because I'm not trying to talk down or you know, demean anything that's out there. But you have to stop showing all the programming of these poor kids that are losing their senior seasons. Hey, I feel terrible for these kids. But you know what? The kids don't even want to watch that stuff. It's too sad. It's heartbreaking. It is sad for everyone. We don't want to watch that. We also don't want to watch the ESPN Ocho stuff. I don't care about axe throwing and throwing darts or dodgeball championships or whatever. Like, you might tune in for 5 seconds. You're not going to stay with that stuff.
Well, one thing that it kind of happened in 08 too, when we had the big recession, there's a lot of contraction as far as excess. How many ESPN channels are there? 3, 4, 5?
100. There's so
many. It may end up coming to a point to where they're going to have to get down to a reasonable, you know, they've already laid off staff and who has and things like that. But I mean, it's going to be an interesting result here throughout the rest of the year.
Well, Mike, I wanted to bring you in today and I wanted to do something a little bit different because there are a few stations. We're starting to see it a little bit. Even ESPN is getting in on it. They are starting to play some of the great games from the past, and you're starting to be able to watch some of those. And I actually like it because you know what? It feels like there are sports on again, even if they're not. But Mike, I know you're like me. I know that you tape games and you will go back and watch them later. And we actually have a pretty big library combined of past games tucked away in some storage somewhere. What is the draw to watching these past games for you? Like, is there something about these past? Because I go back and I watch some of these and maybe I'm an idiot, but I love it.
No, you and I are in the same boat, and I know we're not alone. It's funny because I'll be sitting here watching an old game, and obviously I know what happens,
right.
You know, and you know, my kids or my wife will kind of poke at me. Why are you watching this game? You've already seen it. And I just look at them and say, well, how many times have you watched Titanic?
See, exactly.
You know
she's going to kick him off that giant canoe, and you still watch it. No, you're exactly right.
It's entertainment.
It is, and you know, there's a couple things about it. For one, a lot of times we are witnessing history. Now, it might be sports history, but you're literally witnessing history and you're seeing something maybe that's never happened, or maybe you're seeing this amazing event, or you're seeing this amazing game that wasn't, you know, whatever. Sometimes you are seeing that, but I'm going to give you another example of why I kind of watch some of these games. I also like to go back and watch and see how my memory has held up. And I'll give you like an example. At one time, I'm writing for this local Colorado magazine and they asked me to do an article on the greatest quarterbacks in the history of the Denver Broncos. Okay, so I like make my list. I've got Elway, I've got Peyton, I've got like Craig Morton and Jake Plummer, and I think I threw Charlie Johnson on there, okay? Not all that controversial. Like, that's probably the best we're going to get, right? And the article goes up and some guy emails me at my work email and he says, you don't know anything about Broncos history, dude. Have you ever heard of a guy named Norris Weiss? He was one of the best ever. And usually you get those emails and a lot of times you get like hate mail or whatever and you just delete them, whatever. I actually wrote the guy back and I said, you do realize in his career that Norris Weiss started 7 games. He threw 7 touchdowns and he threw 14 interceptions. He was horrible. He was terrible. And the guy actually wrote him back, and I give him some credit. He wrote back and he said, man, I watched that when I was in elementary school. I thought he was really good. Now I'm looking up his stats, and I'm like, no, but your memory doesn't hold up. So sometimes we watch these games, and you go back, and you're like, dude, that is not how I remembered that. That is not what I was thinking that looked like. Or sometimes it's even better.
I don't remember all of this.
See? Yeah. Exactly. And so sometimes when we look at these games, so if you're going to go back and you're going to watch some of these games that we talk about, you might want to keep some of these things in mind, because sometimes you don't have that memory, that picture right in your mind, and you go back and watch it, and you're like, oh man, I didn't remember that. That is a really cool, you know, angle that I didn't remember that. Mike, let's start off in college basketball. Because, I mean, that was supposed to have finished up earlier this week, but of course it didn't. But if you are going back into college hoops, and I've got a few college basketball games that I would love to go back and rewatch, but is there a game that maybe stands out to you that you're like, dude, if I was going to sit down and just put a game up and watch the entire thing, what game would stand out to you from college basketball?
I'm going to guess that this is probably on your list. How about the 1983 men's basketball championship?
North Carolina State versus Houston.
Over Houston.
Phenomenal game. Phenomenal game.
Talk about a Cinderella story. Okay, Houston was riding a 26-game win streak.
Unbeatable.
Now, absolutely. And to get into the final game, they beat the number 2 rated team. Handily. So it's truly the Dave and Goliath story. You look at the lineup here for NC State. Okay, they had Spud Webb, had a great NBA career.
Right.
You had 2 other guys that had a cup of coffee in the NBA, and that's it. If you look at Houston,
they're loaded.
I don't know, you ever hear of Akeem Olajuwon?
Right.
Clyde Drexler?
Yep.
I mean, 2 Hall of Fame basketball players there. That right there, and just the image after the game-winning dunk, whatever you want to call it there.
Right. Here's a clip of that final play from CBS.
It's down to 7 seconds. You can see the time. Wittenberg, oh, it's a long ways. Oh! They won it!
Coach running onto the court, just looking for somebody to hug.
Well, and the interesting part, too, Jim Valvano goes into that game, and he is telling the media, hey, we're going to slow it down. We're going to play 4 corners. We're going to stall. We're going to delay. And then he goes and tells his team, we're not doing any of that. We're going to go out and we're going to play these guys. And we're going to beat these guys. Phenomenal story. Excellent game to watch. And like you said, a game that if you just want to sit down and you want to tune in for, excellent game to watch, because what a finish. What a story. Cinderella story. No, amazing game. Excellent pick on that one. I actually have that one on my list. I'm going to go with another game, though. I'm going to go with 1992 Kentucky versus Duke game in the Elite Eight of the NCAA tournament that, of course, gave us the shot. Duke was the number 1. Kentucky was a number 2. People kind of forget what that Kentucky team had gone through, though. If you don't remember, Kentucky was coming off of a 2-year postseason ban for all the recruiting violations that took place under Eddie Sutton. So this group with Richie Farmer and John Pelfrey and Sean Woods, they were called the Unforgettables. They joined up with the young Jamal Mashburn and faced Duke in that epic game. Goes to overtime. 2 seconds left. Duke down by 1. Grant Hill throws that perfect 80-foot pass. And Christian Laettner has the presence of mind to fake one way, put it on the floor, and turn around and hit the game winner from around the free throw line. You know, there's a few things that I think of when I think about game. One, lost in that incredible shot. Jamal Mashburn was a man in that game. Dude had like 28 and 10. And Laettner should have been ejected for stomping on a Kentucky player earlier in the game. You also have the decision of Rick Pitino, who didn't put anyone on the inbounder on Grant Hill, which is fine. But you can also tell that he told his guys, whatever you do, don't foul Laettner. You got to go out and play, because they let Laettner get a really, really good look. But Kentucky versus Duke is a game that definitely stands out to me. And again, entertaining from beginning to end.
Yeah, it's you know, most of the... It's funny when you're going through the classics or the top NCAA games, how many of them involve Duke or Kentucky or North Carolina or incredible runs by those teams. It's kind of a different world now because it's all one and done. But
Well, yeah, because
a lot of good games.
Yeah, and you bring up a good point because we got to know the players. Now we only know the coaches. We know the programs, we know the coaches, but we don't know the players until March Madness. Like until the Elite Eight, we really start to get to know the players. Prior to that, you're kind of going, I don't know. This one kid can shoot a little bit. That's about it. I don't know. No, there's some really good college basketball games out there. I'd throw out the 85 championship, Villanova versus Georgetown, where Nova comes out and just plays the perfect game. What they shoot like 76% from the field, 79%, something like that. Anything else you'd put in there for college basketball, though?
Yeah, that is funny. When we were talking about doing this, that was the first game that came to my mind, and it was, geez, almost 40 years ago.
Oh, Mike, you're making me feel even older. Okay, I know I'm going to struggle to stay awake here, but do you have a Major League Baseball game that you would throw out as a game that's like a must-see game?
I do, and there's going to be a little theme with some of my picks being kind of Homer oriented, but 2007, around these parts, we know it as Rocktober.
Oh, goodness.
The Colorado Rockies in early September were basically all but dead for the playoffs.
Right.
They go on an improbable 13 out of 14. I mean, that at any time is very difficult to do. They won 13 out of 14 just to get to a play-in game, to get to the wild card. And then, you know, it took them 13 innings to beat, I believe it was the Padres.
That's right. That
was incredible. And oddly enough, they went on to sweep the next two rounds, ended up going 21 out of 22, which it's a historic stretch for winning games. And unfortunately, the way the scheduling came out, because they literally swept the first two series there, they had like 10 days off.
Oh, that's right. I remember
that. Or something like that.
Yeah.
But before playing Boston, and Boston just came in here and hot and just, it's funny. I think the Rockies are the only team to play the minimum games and go through the World Series, but they lost it because they swept
right.
the first two series and then got swept
and then got
out.
Swept
so.
By Boston. That's right. So would you watch the play-in game? The
oh,
wild
yes.
card game?
Yeah. Yep.
I could understand that.
Another one that I came up with, and again, this is going back a ways, but May of 1991, 44-year-old Nolan Ryan pitches the seventh no-hitter.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a really good one.
That's ridiculous.
That's insane. Really?
You know, he had seven no-hitters. He was still pitching a no-hitter at age 44. And I dug this up. He had five other no-hitters broken up in the ninth inning.
Oh, jeez. Nolan Ryan was a man. Dude was so good. If I had to put down a baseball game, and this is really recent, so I'm not going that far back, but Game 7, 2016 World Series, I mean, Cubs, Indians, Game 7, we had the weather delay, but I mean, the game went extra innings, back and forth.
Yep.
Cubs led most of the game and actually were up 5-1 at one point, but same thing. You knew one of these teams is going to break a huge drought. I remember
actually staying up
until like after midnight to watch that game. So yeah, there's a few baseball games that you could probably stick with and actually watch. And like you said, sometimes not even necessarily a Game 7, but a game like Nolan Ryan, or a game like that wild card playing game for the Rockies, that game went extra innings. It came down to the final play. No, there's some good games out there. If you're, you know, kind of dying for some baseball, a couple games out there for you that you could definitely watch. Okay, Mike, we're going to move over to the NBA. And we go to another sport that should be going on right now, but it's not. And I have a few, I'll say this, I have a few kind of weird games on my NBA list. But if you were going to sit down and watch an NBA game in its entirety right now, old pass game, what do you got?
I think you might have this one on your list too. You're definitely a bigger basketball fan than I am. And I know how much this era meant to you, but the 1998 NBA Finals Game 6.
Phenomenal game. Chicago at Utah.
Yes.
Jordan's final game.
You know, everybody remembers it was to win his sixth championship and his second three-peat. It's phenomenal. They, you know, Stockton hits a three-pointer with 40 seconds left to put the Jazz up by three. Every other play after that was Jordan. Immediately after that, they go down. Jordan gets a quick bucket, gets them down by one. I don't know what happened to the defense there. And then they get it into Malone in the post, and he's backing up. He looks over his left shoulder at his defender, does not see Jordan coming through to his right, who steals the ball, goes down, and then hits that iconic shot where he pushes off, clears off the defender.
Here is a clip of Jordan's final shot with the Bulls from NBC.
17 seconds from game 7 or from championship number 6. Jordan, open, Chicago with the lead!
And hits that iconic shot.
You know what's funny about that shot too? If you remember, and if you go back and you do watch this game, he drove in and got the quick layup like you talked about. Prior to that, though, Jordan had been coming up short on all of his shots, and he was running out of legs. He was tired. On that last shot, he holds his follow-through. And I know that everyone was kind of saying, he's holding that follow-through because he knows it's his final shot. No, he's holding that follow-through because he knows he's been short, and he wants to make sure I drain this shot. And he knocks it down, and he ends it and finishes the game right there. That's an excellent choice there. It's funny because I did go in that era. I actually went the year before because I want to watch the 97 NBA Finals, Game 5, known as the flu game. Same thing.
Unreal.
Bulls versus Jazz, tied at 2, Game 5. Jordan is playing with flu-like symptoms. Now, there were rumors he was hungover, or he actually had the flu, or he had food poisoning, or he was out all night partying. I don't know what it was, but I know this. When he walked out on the court, Michael Jordan was gray. Like, his skin was gray. I don't know. That, like, he didn't look right. And somehow, he wills himself to 38 points. He hits a three-pointer late to clinch the win on the road in Utah. Now, I know there are some players, I'm not naming names, that don't always, even like in the NBA Finals, they don't always feel like playing. But like in the playoffs, sometimes they just take a game off. He had the excuse to not play that night. He came out and still found a way to get it done. That's why he's a little bit higher on the echelon for me. Hey, Mike found a way to win in a game he, you could tell, dude was not right. Got anything else on the NBA list for us?
Yeah, I do. Going back a few years, even before what we're talking about there, first round of the playoffs, 1994.
I remember this well.
The first 8 seed to beat a 1 seed, Denver Nuggets. We're down. This was back when they had a best of 5.
Yes.
We're down 2 games and come back and beat the Seattle Supersonics, who had won 63 games that year.
That was an excellent team. That is a underrated basketball team, that Seattle team, with Kemp and Payton and Detlef Schrempf, and Sam Perkins was on that team. That was a really, really good team.
Yes. They won 21 more games in a regular season than the Nuggets.
That team was loaded, and the Nuggets just started playing really, really good basketball. Dikembe Mutombo is playing out of his mind. He's changing everything that comes inside. You're getting contributions from guys like Robert Pack and LaPhonso Ellis and, of course, Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf. That was such a fun series. Denver's weird because we are such a snake-bit team in basketball, you know, with the Nuggets. But you have, like, a run like that. That was such a fun year.
Well, a lot of, and you're talking about, you know, going back and forgetting surrounding aspects of these sports stories. They went down 3-0 to the Jazz in the next round in the 7-game series and pushed that to 7
and
games.
Took that to 7. And if they win that, as bizarre as this sounds, they had owned Houston. They had been very good against Houston, and they had been very good against the Knicks, who they could have seen. They couldn't get past the Jazz, though. It's all about matchups. The Nuggets did not match up well with the Utah Jazz in Game 7. They just couldn't get stops when they had to. I'm going to throw out a couple more games here. The 1976 NBA Finals Game 5, Phoenix Suns versus Boston Celtics, and this is going way back. It's been called the greatest game ever. It went 3 overtimes, and if you go back and you watch it now, there's some really, really weird things that happen. For one, the score is tied 95-95, and Boston's Paul Silas, he's trying to call a timeout near the end of regulation. The problem is the Celtics have no timeouts. So if they grant him this timeout, it's going to be a technical, and Phoenix is going to shoot free throws and end the game. The ref looks at him and then just like looks away like, I'm not giving him a timeout. It's going to end the game on a technical. I mean, it's so bizarre. There were a few instances, like weird clock management. The clock wasn't starting when it should have. It was really weird. Boston actually ended up winning it 128-126, 3 overtimes in an NBA Finals game, though. I got to put that on the list. Just entertaining to watch.
Crazy stuff. Michigan wishes the ref would have ignored the attempted timeout.
Well, they ignored the travel, so then they had to ring up the timeout. You know, Mike, there's one other game that I would like to see, and here's the problem: I can't see it because I don't think it exists. I'm going to throw out a game for you, okay? Philadelphia Warriors versus New York Knicks, March 2nd, 1962. The Warriors win the game 169-147. Not even a close game. Not even an interesting score, right? But in this game, a player went 36 of 63 from the field. He shot 28 of 32 at the line, and Wilt Chamberlain finishes with 100 points. Mike, I want to see the game, and I'll tell you why. There's no film of this game at all. I think they might have some radio clips of it. I don't know. I just want to see what in the world was the other team doing when Wilt was scoring 100. Because, like, was this like a dare? Were they like, nah, he's not that good. He can't score 100. Were they doubling him? What in the world were they doing that they allowed Wilt Chamberlain to score 100 points in a game? I wish I could see that. I can't watch it, but I wish that I could. And what about Wilt?
Definitely a different era. The interesting thing is back then, your big, athletic, talented guys were so few and far between.
Right.
A lot of teams didn't know what the hell to do with them.
No, they didn't. And so they literally just kind of stood there and watched them and let a guy like him dominate. I don't know how Wilt would be in this era. It would be interesting to see. But I always wonder, like, Wilt's teammates, are they like, dude, Wilt, I know you've got like 96, but can you kick it out? I'm open. Like, make an outlet pass every once in a while, bro, because, like, I'm wide open too. I know you're going for your triple digits, but I would love to see that game. From what I understand, it doesn't exist, but I would like to see it.
Mike, that would be a fun one.
Mike, I've got one more subject to get to, and then we're going to take a real short break. But I know we didn't really talk about, like, boxing or anything. If you had a fight that you would go back and watch, are there any fights that you would go back and watch?
Oh, geez. There's probably a few. I'd have to go back and think of them. They weren't great fights, but just the sheer domination of Tyson.
Yeah. Yeah, Tyson's fights
were always entertaining. Animalistic. I mean, it was just crazy to watch. I mean, you get these people, this is way, 20 plus years ago, but paying 50, 60 bucks for pay-per-view, and they go grab the popcorn and come and sit down and the fight's over.
So, dude, I was literally at a party, a Mike Tyson party, and the host who paid the money walked out to get a beer, fight ended, and he walked back. We're like, dude, it's over. He's like, no, haha, yeah. What happened? And we're like, yeah, no, yeah. It's
sounds
over.
About right. Several Ali matches I'd love to watch.
Yeah, no, you're right. Ali Frazier, pick one. Those were all three great fights. So Ali Frazier, you absolutely couldn't go wrong. And I thought about that one too. I'll give you a trilogy of fights that if you haven't seen, I would encourage you to go find these. Arturo Gatti versus Mickey Ward, and I am telling you, your head will explode from the amount of action that is taking place in this fight. All three of them go all 10 rounds. They all went to decision, and they are absolutely insane. They ended up making, the Mickey Ward movie about that. Arturo Gatti, Mickey Ward, Google it, YouTube it, whatever. Trust me, it will be well worth your time to go watch those fights. Best fights I've ever seen. Not even close. So good. You will be highly entertained. Okay, coming back. We need to get to a few more best games of all time. And yes, Mike and I are now going to move over to the world of football. We've got a few games in college football. Mike, it's going to be tough to trim down this list for the NFL, but we've got some really, really good games in the NFL too. We are going to get to those when we get back. Okay, joining us here on The Dose, Mike is here. And we are spending some time talking about some of the greatest games ever. Maybe you go back and you find some of these games to watch and kill some time as we're all, kind of stuck in quarantine. Mike, before we get to college football, before we get to the NFL, do you have any hockey games that might be worth, somebody out there might want to watch a hockey game. They're also missing their season right now. Got any NHL or any kind of hockey games that you'd watch?
Yeah. Well, again, it's a little on the homer side, but it was a great game and capped an incredible season. June of 96, game four, the Avs beat the Florida Panthers.
Florida Panthers.
And,
doesn't that go like
triple overtime?
Triple overtime. Goodness.
Triple overtime. They win 1-0. Patrick Waugh stops 63 shots in that game.
Unbelievable.
And that whole playoff series, and what an introduction for the state of Colorado for NHL hockey, because that was the first year for the Avalanche. And that also started one of the best rivalries in sports at the time, the rivalry with the Red Wings.
Yeah.
The series before to get to the Stanley Cup Finals, the Avs beat Detroit, who still to this day hold the record for most points, 131 points to win the President's Trophy. 131
that's
points.
Insane.
The next closest team was almost 30 points behind. And that's how the Avs got into the Stanley Cup Finals. It was unbelievable.
That was such a fun season. That was an amazing season. And that series with the Red Wings, oh my goodness. That's what ended up bringing about all the bloodbath games and all the insanity that followed. That was such a brutal, vicious rivalry. Excellent call there with the triple overtime game in the Stanley Cup Final. You know what? I would not go with the NHL. I would go with the 1980 Miracle on Ice, USA versus Soviet Union. And I actually have gone back and I've watched that game. It's kind of a weird game to watch. There's a few things about it that, again, you don't really maybe know or maybe you forgot. Team USA totally gets like a weird fluky goal at the end of the first period. Mark Johnson shoots it from way out and somehow like the goalie just can't track it. He doesn't follow it. They score. It evens things up. And then you have the Soviets like mashing the panic button, pulling their goalie, who is like the best goalie in the world at the time. Huge mistake by the Soviets. And USA gets hot. Goaltender Jimmy Craig plays the game of his life and somehow Team USA beats the Russians. I mean, you can't, you know, do any worse than do you believe in miracles? Hey, here is Al Michaels' famous call from the Miracle on Ice. This comes to us from ABC.
5 seconds left in the game. Do you believe in miracles? Yes!
But that's another fun game, again, just to watch in its entirety. Something that if you're bored one of these nights and you're missing some hockey, guarantee you could watch one of these games.
That's another situation, too, where a lot of people forget the surrounding story to that. In the prelims, I think the Soviet Union beat the United States was like 8-1 or something. They just trounced them.
Yes.
And that didn't win anything. They still had to go on to win the next game to win the gold medal.
Yes, that wasn't the gold medal game. They still had to go on and win it. And what they say is that their coach takes them in the locker room and says, if you beat the Soviets and you lose this gold medal game, none of it matters. You have to go find a way to win this game. And it wasn't very pretty, but they ended up winning the gold. Highly entertaining game, though. If you want to sit at the edge of your seat, especially in those last few minutes where they're just trying to kill time. They're just trying to run off the clock. And the Soviets are putting every shot they can on the goal. Excellent game to watch. And same kind of thing. You're like, oh, man, I don't know if I knew that or I don't know if I remember that. Interesting game there. Mike, let's move over to a sport that we are hoping is going to be coming soon, and that is college football. There have been so many great games, but if you're going to sit down, you're going to watch a game right now, what college football game are you going to settle in and watch the entire game?
Boy, I've got a few. It's funny, the first one that actually popped into my mind was actually the Fiesta Bowl back when Boise State was just making noise. Got no respect in the polls.
None.
The BCS gave them no love. They had to go and play Oklahoma, who was a powerhouse. Oklahoma was insulted at that matchup.
And that's Adrian Peterson, Oklahoma. This is not a garbage Oklahoma team. That's a pretty good team.
Yes. Boise State, Oklahoma, at the beginning, Oklahoma was sleepwalking. They thought they could just show up and win. And Boise State proved that they deserved to be there. Boise State actually had an 18-point lead. And then game was tied. Boise State throws a pick six. And everybody's thinking, oh, no.
It's over.
There it is.
It was fun while
game
it lasted.
Game is over.
You're right.
Game is over. And that was with 1 minute left. Boise State gets the ball back. Check this out. There are teams that have gadget plays. There are teams that will do one gadget play every 3 or 4 games. That game ended on 3 consecutive gadget plays.
So insane.
The hook and ladder to get them down there.
Yes.
The halfback option pass to score the touchdown.
And then they go for 2.
And it wasn't the Statue of Liberty for the 2?
Yes, the Statue of Liberty behind the back handoff for 2. We actually have a clip of that 2-point conversion from ESPN.
Boise State for the win. They hand it off to Johnson. Boise State has won the Tostitos Fiesta Bowl.
Absolutely unbelievable. And how brass do you have to be to call those plays with everything on the line?
That was insane. Everything about that game, again, the big boys against the guys that didn't belong there, the entertainment of the game, the comeback, the gadget plays, that was such an entertaining game. If you can find that one somewhere, I promise you, you will be entertained watching that game.
No, that's a great call, and that was on my list as well. Just such a good game, back and forth. You're going to watch it until the very, very end, and like you said, you're going to be highly, highly entertained. Mike, I'm going to give you my first choice, and I'm going to be real honest. It's a game I haven't watched because I wasn't born yet, but back in 1971, number one Nebraska goes to Norman to face the team we just talked about, number two Oklahoma. They say it is the game of the century. I've seen a lot of highlights, but I've never watched the full game. The game changed leads multiple times. The Huskers won 35-31. Nebraska flanker Johnny Rogers returns a punt 72 yards for a touchdown. Nebraska actually went on to win the national championship. I don't think I've ever watched that game from beginning to end. I know I haven't. I've seen a lot of highlights, but they say Oklahoma-Nebraska is one of the greatest games of all time. I'll trust them, and I'll maybe tune in and watch something like that. What else do you got on your college football list?
Again, there are so many that are up there. Auburn, Alabama.
Oh, yeah. Are we talking game is, six?
Yes. Game is tied. The play goes out of bounds. Nick Saban, to run the clock out, Nick Saban argues and argues and argues and gets a second put back on the clock so he can attempt a 57-yard field goal.
Right.
Remember that?
Yes. He
He's
wanted
like, no,
that
one
kick.
Second. There's 1 second. He lobbies, he yells, he argues, and he wins.
And their kicking game was horrible all day.
And he attempts the 57-yarder. It falls short. Auburn smartly puts a fast guy in the back of the end zone. He catches it and runs it back to win the game. Unbelievable. The look on Saban's
Well, the whole thing. It's so crazy because when you watch that play, I believe it was Chris Davis that catches that and takes it out. Alabama doesn't have like a kick coverage team in there. And because of the length of the field goal, there's some real estate there. Like Davis can get his speed up. You have these big offensive linemen trying to chase down this defensive back. They don't have a prayer. Like he heads down the sideline. Well, they're not even getting over to him.
Half the team was just walking off the field going to overtime.
Yes. Like, okay, I guess we missed, so that's that. No, this game's not over. The kick six is definitely on the list, and what a bizarre finish to that game. I do remember Nick Saban walking off the field like he had just seen a ghost. Like, what just happened? What in the world just happened? What a strange turn of events. And that Alabama team, that was a loaded, stacked team that Auburn knocks off in the biggest rivalry at Auburn, playing it on the Plains. Oof, that's a rough one. I've got a game here. It was actually on ESPN this last week, but I already had it on my list. The 2006 Rose Bowl between number one USC and number two Texas. And you know, we kind of forget USC had not lost a game in 34 games going clear back to 2003. Matt Leiner and Reggie Bush are going to win their third title in a row. And then Vince Young happened.
Oh, boy, did he. Unbelievable. That's obviously on my list, too. He fourth and five, 19 seconds left, and he makes that play to win the game. That was incredible.
Here's Vince Young scoring that winning touchdown. This comes to us from ABC.
Fourth and five, the national championship on the line right here. He's going for the corner. He's got it. Vince Young scores.
And when you watch that again, like there's a couple things, same thing. There's a couple things that like my memory, I don't know, has to be jarred loose a little bit. One, USC didn't use Reggie Bush that much. There was that fourth and one. He's not even in the game. He's over on the sideline. Like I'm finding every way I can to use Reggie Bush. Also, the play you talked about, fourth and five, down in USC territory, everyone on the planet knows Vince Young is going to keep this ball. There's no question. Vince Young's going to keep this ball. He's the best player on the field, and USC doesn't get anywhere near him. He is running, and it doesn't look like he's running that fast, but he's pulling away from everybody. So apparently he's running pretty fast. He outruns everyone to the end zone. He ends the USC dynasty, and then, of course, you know, the whole Heisman, whatever thing. This is going to sound crazy when I say this, but Pete Carroll might have outcoached himself just a little bit in a big game. I know we've never heard that from Pete Carroll. He never tries to, you know, outthink himself, maybe call him like a pass down at, you know, the goal line or anything like that. But Pete Carroll might have outcoached himself a little bit in this game because, dude, put everybody on Vince Young and you're going to win. And they didn't do that. It ended up costing USC their dynasty that they had rolling along at that time. Got any other games, Mike, on your college football list that you'd go back and watch?
Yeah, there's a couple, you know, and again, it's another one where you don't remember the surrounding pieces to it. But of course, the Cal Stanford game is a classic. And what most people forget about, that everybody remembers the last play running through the band and, you know, the kickoff return with eight laterals or whatever it is. But there's a pretty decent quarterback for Stanford who just led a last second touchdown to take the lead and pretty much sew up the game. I think it was John Elway?
Something like that, yeah. And he was really, really good. That last drive, if not for that goofy, fluky, weird play, which, by the way, I think we can all probably say was probably illegal. There's a couple of forward laterals. There's a one player that looks like he's totally down. I don't know if it's even a legal play. But you're right. John Elway puts together this amazing comeback, and we completely forget about it because you're like, wait, well, yeah, but did you see the last play? I don't know if you saw the last play, but did you see the last play? Mike, I'm gonna put one in there that's kind of along with that same sort of finish. The 94 University of Colorado going to Michigan, going to the Big House. What we kind of forget about that game, that was a really good game, both sides. I mean, Cordell Stewart.
It was two top 10 teams.
Yes. CU had been up in that game. What was that? Cordell and Rashawn Salaam and Michael Westbrook. Michigan comes back. They're going to get the win. It's going to be a little bit ugly. And yeah, CU scared us a little bit. And then the biggest thing that stands out for me when I rewatch that game, and I think I might have this game recorded somewhere out in the garage or something. But when I watch this game, the craziest thing to me is how far Cordell Stewart
65 yards
throws
in the
Hail Mary. I mean, for one, if I'm Michigan, I do not let him wind up. I'm going to bring someone else. It might be a delayed blitz, but I'm going to bring someone else because you can't wind up on this thing. He winds up and he chucks this thing. Like you said, 65 yards in the air, gets the perfect tip, gets the perfect receiver behind it. Michael Westbrook catches it in the end zone and beats Michigan in Michigan. Yeah, that's another insane one. Got anything else for our college football list before we get to the big list? Because we've got a big section here to go. Got anything else on your college football list?
Yeah, there's plenty of them, but I kind of cut it off at those handful there.
Yeah, I'm the same way. There are a few ones out there that I would definitely put in there. Miami and Penn State played a pretty good national championship game. If you need a game, you could always go back and watch that one. No one, and I mean no one, was picking Penn State in that game, and they gave Miami a pretty good game there. That would be the only other one that I would put on my list, at least right now. Mike,
the Doug Flutie bowl was pretty good.
Doug Flutie against Miami, somehow chucking that ball down. Doug Phelan, I think, was the guy that ended up catching that ball. Yeah, that's another phenomenal one. No, there's so many good ones. I'm telling you, go back and find some of these games and don't just watch the highlights. Watch the whole game because you're going to pick up so many things that you either forgot or maybe you never knew. And that are going to be so, so interesting to you. Mike, let's get to our final category of greatest games to watch. And we are going to arrive at the National Football League. And same thing, Mike, we've got a million games to choose from. There's so many great games. But again, if you are looking for a fun game, and one of the things that I look for, because sometimes there's a great finish, but it's not a great game. Like sometimes you will see a game and be like, oh man, did you see the end of that game? Yeah, but the rest of the game was terrible. Like, I don't want to watch those. Some of these games, they're good throughout. Like, I tried to pick games that you're like, no, I want to watch the second quarter as much as I do the fourth because it's just as good. Those are some of the games that I put on my list. If you had to pick a game to watch from beginning to end, what game are you picking first? What are you putting on the TV?
And I've got too many, but there's not, I don't know if I want to rank any of these, but one of the first ones that came to mind, 1993 playoffs, Bills and the Oilers.
Yeah, I've got that on my list as well. AFC wildcard game.
35-3.
Hey, that
35-3. And you've got your backup quarterback.
It was over.
And he leads the most improbable comeback in NFL playoff history.
Frank Reich is starting for the Bills, not Jim Kelly. Jim Kelly's out with the injury. You've got the Houston Oilers, who, by the way, if they just could have figured out a couple of minor details, that Houston team was really, really good. I mean, they were stacked. They went out and just lit you up. The problem was they couldn't get stops. Warren Moon was so good. Who else was on that team? Give me the Smurfs. Give me the Smurfs. We had Haywood Jeffries, Curtis Duncan.
Gibbons Hill, Drew Hill.
Ernest Givens. That's a really, really good collection of talent. and they would go out and just score points and score points and score points. The problem for them, they couldn't consistently run the ball, and they couldn't get stops when they absolutely had to have stops. Up 35-3, the Buffalo Bills come back and beat them. And one play that stands out for me, and I remember watching it at the time, at the end of regulation, the Oilers have the ball. The game is tied. Buffalo had tied it. There's about, I want to say 30 seconds left, and maybe my math or maybe my memory is off on this. I thought there's about 30 seconds left, and the Oilers kneel on it. And I thought, this game is over. The Bills will win this game. Because you have the exact offense that you would want to go score this quick. You could go down and get a field goal and end this thing. And when they knelt on it, I remember thinking, this game's over. They have no chance because the Bills will fight.
Waving the white flag.
Yep. And you play to win. I'm not going to play to lose. We're going to go out and still win this thing. We're going to pretend that we're down. Let's go win it. That's one that's definitely on the list for me. I had that on my list as well. If I had to pick a game that I'd be watching from beginning to end, I'm going to go back to 1980. Well, it was played in 82, but 1981 AFC divisional playoff game between the Miami Dolphins and the San Diego Chargers. And I'm telling you, for my money, and I was a little kid, but I remember watching this game, and it is maybe the best game I've ever seen. Wild offense, crazy comeback.
Literally two heavyweights standing toe-to-toe, throwing haymakers for more than 60 minutes. Went to overtime.
Yeah, it did go to overtime. The Chargers were actually on top 24-0 in the first quarter. And Miami stormed back, tied the game in the third. I remember this game. I remember watching Miami run the old hook and ladder play. Don Strock hits Duriel Harris, who pitches it to running back Tony Nathan, and he runs it in for the touchdown. And I think my head exploded because I'm a little kid, and I'm like, what was that? I've never seen that before. Game goes back and forth in the fourth quarter, went to overtime. Dan Fouts, and of course, tight end Kellen Winslow, led the Chargers to a 41-38 win. I mean, they carried Kellen Winslow kind of off the field, and Dan Fouts says, no, he was fine. He wasn't
a little drama there.
Yeah, he said he played it up a little bit. He said he didn't believe it, but that's one of the greatest games that I've ever seen. Definitely, and I'm not putting down what Winslow did. I think he had 13 catches and like three touchdowns.
Oh, yeah.
I think he blocked the game, what would have won the game, field goal. They put him in on special teams and he blocks a field goal. I mean, phenomenal game from Winslow. Maybe he played it up a little bit, but no, that's one of the games that's definitely on my list. Mike, what do you have next up for your NFL games?
Funny thing, a little sidebar about that, the game there, that was 80 degrees at kickoff.
Oh, it was super
the very next week,
hot.
Chargers go to Cincinnati.
Yes.
It's 10 below.
Freezing. And you could tell
a 90 degree temperature difference.
Well, and if I remember right, and I could be wrong, this, the game between the Dolphins and the Chargers, I want to say was played on New Year's Day or the day after New Year's. It was right around January and it was hot. They go to Cincinnati and I think temperatures eventually drop down like the 40, 50 below kind of thing. Freezing cold in Cincinnati. And when you saw the Chargers walk in, if you would have told the Chargers, you don't have to play this game, you can go back, get on your plane and fly back to San Diego, they would have done it. They wanted nothing to do with Cincinnati that day. Here's kind of the crazy part that people forget, because everyone's like, dude, if that had been, you know, maybe in San Diego or warm weather, San Diego's probably going to the Super Bowl. People forget earlier that year, Cincinnati had pounded the Chargers already once. And I think that was in San Diego. And it was like 40-7. For whatever reason, the Chargers just couldn't play the Bengals that year. The Bengals manhandled them and they wanted no part of them on that freezing cold day. But I do remember that huge change in weather from one week to the next might be the most dramatic ever in history. What else you got on your list?
That's good. Gotta be a little bit of a homer pick, but it was a big game and it was pretty significant. It broke a 13 consecutive year streak for the NFC winning the Super Bowl. And that's Super Bowl 32.
Really good game. You know, and you don't have to be a Bronco fan.
Very, very good game.
Yep.
You know, again, big double digit underdogs, Broncos. You and I know this because I'm sure we could remember every blade of grass on the field there. But
right.
A lot of people don't realize Terrell Davis missed most of the second quarter with a migraine.
Right.
And he still finished with 150 yards or something.
I mean, yards, yeah. And sat out most of that quarter. And when he came back in the third, I believe one of his first carries, he fumbled. probably not just all there. Maybe it was just a perfect shot on the ball. But I mean, Elway versus Favre, and I know Elway's at the end of the line, but
oh, yeah,
you had some great players. You have Hall of Famers in this game. Terrell Davis is amazing. The offensive line for the Broncos just put the Packers defensive line on a sled and moved them wherever they wanted. And I'll tell you this, and we're going to see if he ends up getting in the Hall of Fame. You can't give him the MVP, but safety Steve Atwater had the game of his life in Super Bowl 32.
Oh, yeah.
He was amazing.
Do you remember towards the end of the game, he knocked him and who was the teammate? The other safety. He knocked each other
Torrey
out.
James or somebody. Knocked the offensive player out. I think there were like three people unconscious. And if I remember right, did they all three leave the game? Because I doubt they did at that time. They were probably like, give them some smelling salts, get them back in there. They'll be fine.
Yeah, concussions were just rumors back then. So.
Right. You just got your belt.
One of the many things that stand out to me in that game is they're on, they're inside the 10, and Shanahan's making the play call. And Davis comes up to me and goes, Coach, I can't see. My migraine's coming on. I literally can't see. He's like, oh, that's okay. I'm not going to give you the ball, but if you're not in there, it won't work.
Right. Don't worry about seeing on this play.
Blind Terrell Davis.
And Elway
and sure
fakes
enough,
it.
The play worked.
And Elway fakes it and does the rollout run in. And Davis just kind of falls into the line because he can't see. He forgot to take his medication, didn't he? I think he was all keyed up and he forgot to take his migraine medication.
Well, I don't know if he had something, cause I know it was after that he got the braces and was working with an inhaler. I mean, they really, really tried to mitigate that stuff afterwards. So
no, that's a phenomenal game though. And it's same thing from beginning to end, because you know, that goes back and forth the entire day. I mean, the Packers are up early, Broncos come back, Packers come back. That's a phenomenal game and a really fun game. I remember that game, and I remember in Denver, there was a lot of feeling of, we don't even want the Broncos to go back, and this is going to be the worst thing ever.
Yes.
Would have been our fifth loss. We're going to pass the Bills. Nobody wanted to go to the Super Bowl. And I remember when John Elway has the helicopter play, and he stands up and he pumps his fist at the bench. They had to take a timeout because he was so fired up. But I remember thinking, they're going to win this game. They're better.
Yeah,
they're better than the Packers. They can physically manhandle the Packers up front, and that's how they end up winning that game. No, that's a great game. Mike, I'm going to go back quite a ways prior to the advent of even the Super Bowl, and I'm going to go to a game that, again, I'm going to trust the experts. They say it's the greatest game in NFL history, the 1958 NFL Championship game between the Baltimore Colts and the New York Giants. It's the first game in NFL history to go to sudden death overtime in the championship. The Colts win 23-17 because Johnny Unitas was amazing. He threw for 349 yards in the biggest game. They say this is the game that put the NFL on the map, because at that time, the NFL wasn't anything. It was all about college football. And this game kind of captured the attention of the American audience. And everyone's like, hey, maybe pro football has a future in this country. There's actually a really good book by a guy named, I think, Mark Bowden, about this game. So I've read the book and I have these images in my mind, but I don't think I've ever watched the 58 championship game between the Colts and the Giants, but I bet it's out there. If I dig for it, I bet I could find it. And again, I kind of want to see what it's all about, because I've read about it, I've heard about it, but I want to see it and actually see what it was about. This game, I mean, they rush the field when it's over. They tear down the goalposts when it's over. It's like a college atmosphere. Colts Giants 58. I think that would be a good one to watch. What else do you have on your list though?
Well, another historically significant game, Super Bowl III. A lot of people don't realize that was actually the first championship game to be called Super Bowl, even though it's number three.
Yeah.
But the old AFL / AFC was the Little Sisters of the Poor.
Yeah.
And Namath, made his guarantee and pulled through it and beat a very good team.
Oh, yeah. Same thing, because you're only talking, probably about 7 years, something like that, after that Colts-Giants game. You're talking about a championship-caliber team. Johnny Unitas, I think Earl Morrill maybe was in that game. Raymond Berry, that Colts team was loaded. But Joe Namath, and I know Namath didn't put up the numbers that he would have today. And I know that in that game, he's not great. The one thing we kind of forget with that Jets game beating the Colts in Super Bowl III, Joe Namath is calling his own plays. He's not getting them in through his headset. All those running plays that had success, all the passing plays that he did have success on, he's calling them himself. Like, he's making those calls. He's walking to the line and saying, hey, here's what we're going to run. Here's what they're in. Here's how we're going to counter it. I got to give Namath a ton of credit. He's not just getting his stuff in from a headset.
Yeah, that's up there. Whether it was a hugely entertaining game or not, it may be debatable, but the historical significance of it is undeniable.
Oh, yeah, no question. You finally get the AFL beating the mighty NFL in a game that nobody thought they'd even have a chance in. The Jets and the AFL were a lot better than people think. And you think of some of those teams that came out of the AFL. I don't know, the Chiefs lately, the Bills, the Raiders, the Chargers. I mean, those are all old AFL teams. That was a fun brand of football, though. And that joining together of those two leagues is what made the NFL just blow up the way that it has. I would put the 67 championship game in there, the Ice Bowl, Green Bay beating Dallas on the last play of the game. They say temperatures dropped as low as 70 below zero. That is a game that I actually have watched in its entirety before. These guys are playing on like glorified dirt. Like there's kind of some grass there, but it's glorified dirt. They are sliding like they're on a frozen pond. You can't get any grip on the final play. Bart Starr is told, let's run the fullback draw. He says, coach, I'm just going to keep it because if I go back to hand it to him, I'm just going to fall down. So he keeps it. He falls over right guard behind Jerry Kramer, gets the win over the Cowboys. But what a crazy, bizarre game just from the weather standpoint. And the nuts that are sitting up in the stands, I believe there were multiple reports of frostbite and people losing, appendages having sat out in that game. All right, Mike, you got anything else to finish off our show on greatest games to watch? Because I know I've got one more.
Yeah, I've got a handful, and oddly enough, these are regular season games, but okay. Incredibly entertaining, okay? 85 Dolphins upsetting the undefeated Bears.
Oh, yeah. Monday Night Football.
That was supposed to be the Super Bowl matchup, but New England went in, snuck into the Dolphins and caught them sleeping, because that would have been a heck of a Super Bowl.
Oh, it would have been phenomenal. And remember, that's that Miami team that is playing for their former players that don't want the Bears to go undefeated that year. So, like, Miami had some pressure on them. We've got to show up and we've got to do it. They knock off the 85 Bears on Monday Night Football, and Dan Marino, kind of a little ahead of his time, quick passes, get this ball out before the defense can get to me. You want to bring that 46 blitz at me, I'm going to hit my guys before you can get to me. And Dan Marino, Don Shula, pull off an upset there. That's a great one.
They put up 38 points on that historical defense.
Yeah. And you know what? Shula was so smart. He said, we can't protect him, but we can move him around and we can give him hot receivers to get it out quick. And they dominated the Bears on that night in Miami. Ooh, that was a good one.
Yep. And then, two more, a little more recent. If you like offense, October 2013, Broncos Cowboys.
Oh, yeah. Peyton versus Romo. Yeah.
We all remember the fake handoff with Peyton Manning, who he could be clocked with a sundial rolling around to his left to the end zone. And literally, it took him, I think, 7 seconds, but nobody in the world, I don't even think the cameraman caught it. Nobody followed him. He could have cartwheeled in there. That was an incredible game. Yeah. And honestly, more recently, two seasons ago, the Rams and the Chiefs.
Oh, yeah.
54-51.
Yep. No, that's a great one.
And this is more recent, so people probably remember it a little bit better, but there were two defensive scores in that game, if you can believe that.
Oh, that's right. No, you're right.
Yes.
I forgot about that.
So definitely, if you like offense, those are two games that you will not be disappointed.
Hey, if you're out there listening and you think we missed a game that you felt should have been on our list, feel free, throw them out to us. I would be glad to read them or something. But just so many great games out there to watch. We tried to touch on as many of them as we could. Mike, I have to say thank you so much for stopping by, talking about some of the greatest games that we would like to still sit down and watch. You know, the best thing about this list is the fact that so many of these games, they are available. You can go to YouTube. You can find a lot of the ones we talked about today, and you can put them on, project them onto your TV, whatever you need to do. Put one on. Check out some of these games, and I'm telling you, because I've done it just recently, you are transported to a different time, a time that, maybe you had a little more positivity in your life. You get some sports, you get some excitement, you get some kind of memories recharged. It's actually a lot of fun to do. I would encourage you to do it. Mike, thank you so much for coming in. We might have to do this again sometime soon because, you know, there's not that much to talk about. Don't be surprised when I hit you up to have you come in and talk a little bit more sports. But thank you so much for stopping by. We always enjoy your visits.
Always, always love it. It's always a fun time. Thank you.
Hey, next week on The Dose, I have something a little bit different for you. And I'm telling you right now, it is different than anything we have ever done here on The Daily Dose. But I feel like if you are struggling through all of these weird times and what is going on in the world right now, trust me, you need to listen to The Daily Dose next week. We are going to have something extra special for you. Hey, like I've told you before, stay positive, kids. This will pass. We will move forward. Things are going to get better. Stay healthy. Get in a workout. Do some reading. Be nice to those people around you. Things are going to get better. Hey, don't forget to go over to YouTube, subscribe to our Daily Dose channel over there, look for the logo, and I will leave links everywhere again so that you can make sure that you get the correct one. I have to say thanks very much to Mike for stopping by and helping us come up with some of the best games in sports history. We always appreciate your visits. Hey, thanks to each and every one of you for listening to the Daily Dose every week. Thank you for the emails. Thank you for the texts. Thank you for the tweets. Thank you for going wherever it is that you download the show and leaving us that 5-star review. We appreciate that so much. And thank you for subscribing to our YouTube channel and giving us some positive feedback there as well. But most of all, thank you so much for sharing the show with someone that you know, whether it's a family member, a coworker, or a friend, whoever it might be. We absolutely love it when you share the show with someone that you know. Have to say thank you to GSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all next Wednesday. Have a great week, everybody. You honk and we'll drink.